Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
If you're looking for a good real estate book to read, I made a list of all of the books we've talked about on the show. You can check it out at rentalincomepodcast.com/books. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about the sweet spot in investing in rental properties. Now, generally on the lower end properties, you are going to make a lot more money. These properties are generally pretty cheap and the rents are pretty high. So there's a lot of profit margin there. But the downside is these tenants are generally lower quality tenants. So you're going to have more issues. You're probably going to have more evictions. These properties are older, so you're going to have more repairs to do. There's generally just a lot more work with the lower end properties, but there's a lot more money there. So for a lot of people, that is worth it. On the other end of the spectrum, on the higher end properties, there's going to be a lot less work to do. These tenants are generally more stable. These properties are newer, so there's less repairs to do. There's less handholding. But the downside is these properties are more expensive. The rents are higher, but because the properties are more expensive, there's less profit margin there. So you're going to make a lot less money. And then you got the sweet spot right in the middle, and that is what my guest today specializes in. Joining me from Oklahoma City is J.R. Spence. J.R., I want to hear more about the sweet spot and exactly what you're looking for in these properties and exactly what you have going on. But first, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been investing in real estate for?
I've been in real estate since 2002. I had a real estate sales company and a mortgage company. And then about 4.5 years ago, I started the property management side. We're up to about 400 properties that we manage, over 400 properties that we manage in Oklahoma City, Tulsa, and Dallas. I personally own, I've got one under contract right now, so I've got about 11 properties that I own right now.
Is there a certain type of property that you like to buy?
I have a lot of investors that I work with. I tell everybody there's, you know, but kind of what you talked about, the sweet spot of where you want to be. And first of all, the school systems are super important. So, you know, wherever you're looking, in whatever metro that you're looking in, school system needs to be one of the number one things that you need to be looking at when you're looking at a property. Find out where that school system ranks. You know, there's all kinds of stuff out there in the public now to see where it ranks. Like, for instance, in Oklahoma City, Edmond has one of the best school systems in the nation. So that when people are relocating, because that's what a lot of people that are renting, they're relocating from out of state, and that's they're renting first. So school system, I'm pretty big on the age of the house, too. I mean, if it's older house, you better make sure that most of the mechanicals and all that have been replaced, you know, and the seller can show they've been replaced. But otherwise, I typically like to stick to newer homes. Frankly, even newer construction is not bad sometimes if you can get a good deal here and there.
That's interesting. So new construction, a lot of times new construction costs more than a house that's already been built.
And that's a true statement. However, here's what I've found in a lot of new construction. And I don't recommend somebody going all new construction, but like I've got several, I've actually bought one myself. So I've got several owners that are investors with me that kind of have that as part of their portfolio. The new construction, yes, you're paying a little bit more, but people like new construction as far as from a renter standpoint. So you're going to get a premium on that property. So you will get that back. And you're making up for it in your return and your maintenance because you're not, for Oklahoma, for instance, all homes have a one-year warranty on them. So, you know, your first year of maintenance and really even going on after that, this new construction, everything's new. So when you take that into your equation, because that's part of what you need to take into your equation when you're investing in a property is what it's going to cost you from the maintenance perspective. So that's one of the reasons that, to me, you know, the new construction is something to look at every once in a while if you can find a good deal.
Yeah, that's interesting. So if you're looking at buying a house that's already built, you want to make sure that the seller has replaced everything or you're getting a good enough deal to where you can put money into it to replace everything.
Correct. And you know, like that's the deal. You'll find some of those that need, you know, I've had some that I've gone in and rehabbed the kitchen remodeled a master bathroom because it had issues with it. I've had some that were pretty much turnkey, just needed some paint and carpet and some minor things like that. Then, you know, some that, like I said, the new construction, they don't need anything. So that's the deal. And then you're talking about the sweet spot. What I tell everybody all the time is I know a lot of investors out there like to go get a lot of properties and get, you know, a bunch of $50,000 and $60,000 rentals, and I just don't recommend that. And really, if you get into the higher end, our niche is really the medium to higher end properties. So a lot of my clientele are just single family homeowners that have higher end properties. We get them a great rate of return, but you're not going to get the same return that you are in the spot where I tell everybody, which every market's different. You know, like Dallas is higher, the sweet spot, if you will, is a little bit higher than it is in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. But Oklahoma City, for purpose of this conversation, I tell about the time, I like them to be a rental that's about $1,200 a month to about $1,800 a month. And so what you're trying to find is a property that, you know, because what we're going to be able to get there is typically about 1% of the property value at that point. So in other words, if the property, you buy a property that, say, you get it for $130, needs a little work, but maybe it's worth $140, so we're going to be able to get $1,400 a month for that property. Okay. You know, on the lower end, I'll still get that same rate of return. The problem with that is, with the lower end, is you're dealing with tenants. You're having to evict way more often. You're also dealing with, because you're buying properties in areas that are not going to appreciate in value as well, so your asset's not going to appreciate well. And your tenant clientele tends to not take care of the asset as well. So that's why I like to stay away from that. And then when you get much higher, you start dealing with, or your percentage goes down. So in other words, that's why I say in Oklahoma City, $180,000, we can get pretty close to about $1,800 for it, sometimes a little bit lower. But when you start going up, like a $250,000 home, we're not getting $2,500 a month for it. We're going to get about $2,250 a month for it. And of course, it keeps going up from there. You know, a $400,000 house, we're not getting anywhere close to $4,000 a month. You're getting about $3,000 a month for it. So that's why, to me, it's good to stay in those areas. And frankly, too, with the higher end, you're dealing with vacancy a little bit more, you know, because they're a little bit harder to rent out. In this spot I'm talking about, typically it takes you about 3 to 4 weeks to lease the property out. And so most of the time, you know, like with us anyway, when it's in our contract with our tenants, when their lease is up and they're planning on vacating, during their final 45 days with us, we have to go out to enter the property with 24 hours notice to show it to release. So I think about that as, while we've got the income coming in, we're remarketing it. Typically we'll have somebody moving in right on top of somebody moving out.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. And these are single family houses in the 120
Correct.
To 180? Okay.
Correct.
Do you ever recommend people buy condos or townhouses or other types of properties, or do you find single families rent the best?
I find single family rents best. Now, then, downtown Dallas, there's some condos in that area because of that market that makes sense. The problem a lot of times with condos is, or townhomes, you've got a monthly association due that you've got to take into factor with your investment. And
do you think it's best just to steer clear of any neighborhood that has an HOA?
So. Not necessarily. I mean, sometimes. I mean, I've got one of our Israeli investors. They're buying 29 condos that they're buying directly from a builder, and they're doing that, so there's no dues from that. So if they're buying them in bulk like that, or quantity, that there's definitely a good investment there. But a lot of times, some of these smaller, for your smaller investors, if you're out, like I said, it does depend on the market. Oklahoma City, the example I was giving you was, you know, they paid about $250 for that condo, and they're getting $1,000 aside. That's $2,000 return on a $250 investment. When really I could go, you know, identify a property for $125 and $125 and get $1,250 a piece for those, and get $2,500 a month versus a $2,000 a month return on the deal. So with the single family residence, but there's definitely some scenarios where a condo looks good. If the association dues are low, and if they include the insurance for the exterior structure, you know, that's kind of a good thing. But some of them that have those higher end dues, I mean, there's some in Oklahoma City, for instance, that have $300 a month dues. You know, but trying to get your return on that is going to eat into that because of those dues on that.
Walk me through some numbers here. Now, a lot of investors that I've talked to use the 50% rule, meaning that half of the rent money that comes in, they're going to set aside to pay taxes, insurance, maintenance, upkeep on the house. In your experience, do you find that the 50% rule is a good rule of thumb to go by?
It depends on the market. I think that's high. Okay. As far as 50%, I don't think it's that much. And once again, it depends on the property you invest in. You know, if you've got that goes back to what we said in the first of this conversation. If you've got an older property, then you need to take into account that you're going to have higher maintenance that you need to look into.
Right.
So,
okay. Okay. What would be a good number then? So if you're looking at getting a place that has just been updated, or maybe it's new construction, like on a percentage wise, what would be a good amount to budget for everything?
What I tell everybody is, on a, if you get a newer construction home, obviously you've got your management fees that are 10% a month that come out off the top on everything. I tell everybody, if it's fairly new construction, I tell them to budget about $500 a year for maintenance on the property. And then I also tell them to just give it a worst case scenario of, we have a tenant that we have to get out and we have to evict, so count for not having 1 month a year in rental income. Okay. And you know, that's what I didn't know what's sort of put a percentage to that, but that to me is what I tell people is, you can prepare for. Most of the time that's not going to happen, but like I said, for purpose of putting the numbers together and being a smart investor, that's a good conservative thing to do. Now then, once again, if they get a property that, say, built in the, you know, an older property, then that number, that $500, is going to go up, you know, exponentially, just depending on the property.
Now, your other big expense is going to be your loan, unless you're buying the house for cash. Now, you've been doing this for a long time. I'm sure you've seen people come and go. What would be a good amount of money to put down so that you're not so leveraged? Like, what do you recommend?
Typically, I mean, obviously, you have to put 20% down to do an investor loan anyway. I recommend everybody to at least put 25% down. The reason why is you're going to get a better interest rate. The lenders will give you, like I said, you're going to take a hit on your loan because it's investor loan. So the rates that you see, and people need to be prepared for that. People think that they're going to get the rates that they see out there that are rates. Those rates are for owner occupied property. So for being investor property, you're going to take a hit first of all because of that fact. So one of the ways to kind of reduce that hit is put a little bit more money down. 25% instead of 20, and so that reduces your interest. But interest rates are still really good right now from that standpoint. But you know, and what I have a lot of homeowners do, and what I do is I get my properties, and then I pick one property, the first one I've got. I take the income from those, and I sit there and pay that property down first until it's free and clear. You know, once you can get your properties where you're free and clear, you can leverage to loan off the equity in those properties, and you don't necessarily have to go get a loan every time and pay closing costs and all that stuff. So that's what I have a lot of my investors doing that makes good sense too.
Your other big cost is vacancy. What's a good way to make sure that you've minimized the vacancy? You mentioned before about marketing the property before your old tenants move out. Is there anything else that an investor could do to minimize their vacancy?
Be realistic. You know, that's what I tell everybody all the time is we're always going to price the property, my company anyway, we're going to price the property at top of the market. But if we're sitting out there and we don't have anything solid on the property, we need to incrementally lower the price. Because I tell everybody all the time is, trying to get an additional $100 out of a property a month when it sits there vacant for a month and a half because you've had it priced too high, if you start doing the numbers to it, that doesn't make sense. So main thing is, you know, if you've got a good reputable management company that's getting you the numbers, you know, if your property's not getting the numbers, that it's your property. And that's what I tell people all the time. I mean, and I have my own. I mean, I've got properties that I hit home runs on, and I've had some. I've got one right now that I did some rehab on it, but it's still sitting there, and I've had to lower it below what I want on it, but I need to get somebody in it. So, because like I said, vacancy is worse than, take a little bit less on it is way better than let it sit there vacant for a month or whatever.
When your leases come up, do you always raise the rent every year?
No, typically after the first year, if they renew for a second year, we typically don't increase the rent. If they do 6 months, we do a 5% increase. If they do short, you know, month to month or short term, we do a 10%. Typically after the second year, we might raise the rent. But I advise everybody to be careful with we all know that homes are appreciating and getting better. One of the issues is, though, there's a lot of large players out there that are investing in these markets because it's smart money. And so there's a lot of these hedge funds and a lot of these American Homes for Rent and different ones out there that are coming in, gobbling up a bunch of properties and renting them out. So the problem is, while it's still a good investment, your rental rate is going to go up slowly. While we're getting a good rate of return, just be careful about the fact that trying to raise it too much because you think it's going to go up every year. Like I said, with a lot of the players in there, it's kind of gotten where there's a lot of inventory out there. So
right on a renewal for the second year, do you typically raise it a little bit then?
Well, it's like a lot of my have individual homeowners and investors, and so it's at their discretion. We typically tell everybody after the second year to try to get about a 5% raise. out of the property. But so that's kind of standard there. But like I was saying earlier, you just get, people need to kind of be careful thinking it's going to go up a whole lot because of the fact that, like I said, that there's a lot of people and a lot of large people investing in properties now.
Right. Well, JR, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know I've learned a lot. If somebody wants to get in contact with you or check out your company, where's the best way to find you online?
Best way to find us online is at our website. It's at homeworksusa.com. That's HOMEWORXUSA.com.
And tell me exactly what you guys do.
Yeah, we have property management where we have a sales side. So we like I tell me all the time, we do it all. I've got a roofing and construction company. So we do for our investors, we identify the asset for them, and help them with the purchase process of getting that done. Of course, get the property on the market for lease. And like I tell everybody all the time, I'm going to be able to get more for the property than, frankly, you could as an individual or even working with another realtor, because we spend about, we put a lot of money and dollars in our online advertising as far as when somebody types in home for rent, home for lease, of course, Oklahoma City, Dallas, or Tulsa, our properties come up first of all to the search engine, and so does our website. So that's how we're going to get the traffic and get the best bang, best return for our investors, and frankly, for just our individual homeowners as well.
If someone is from out of town and they're interested in investing in one of the markets you work in, could they do it virtually without going there? Like, could they buy a property online?
Absolutely. Okay. We have investors that are out of the country. So,
okay.
I mean, we've got investors from California to Colorado, and we've got them in Israel. I mean, we've got investors from literally all over the world. So yes, as a matter of fact, I just hung up with one out of Colorado a few minutes ago before this. And, he's basically got one he's closing on and not going to be here for the closing or anything.
Great. Well, if you want to reach out to JR, I've got his contact information on the show notes page. You can find that at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode43. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.